Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. And welcome to viewers joining us on demand on Sky Sports as we are going to look back at Wild Card Weekend in the NFL playoffs. The first of two podcasts this week, Jeff, so we can just look back this first edition, and then later in the week we'll make our picks and look ahead to divisional round when the big boys enter the fray. But first of all, what a fun weekend it was. I mean, it's always a testing weekend. 8 hours for us on Saturday and then straight back in almost. I mean, I woke up Sunday, lunchtime, I had lasagna for breakfast. That's just wrong. I mean, it's just wrong. But it was nice, but it was
on a
wrong.
Lot of levels, yeah. That's wrong. But I can't imagine how you do it because you got to go back to Kent.
I go home. There's nothing like your own bed.
Tell the listeners about the experience you had.
Well, so my plan was, okay, like I've got to go home, or I want to go home to sleep. So I figure instead of driving to Sky and then home again, I'll get a car, you know, and that's hour and 15 minute drive home. That's an hour and 15 minutes of sleep before I even get home. I can crawl out of the car, straight into bed and carry on sleeping. The car journey was an adventure. I mean, I'm not naming names or companies, but I thought his name was Vera because he was veering over here and veering over there. So like every time I just about doze off and I was like, oh, lovely, a little sleep. And you'd hear that rumble, rumble, rumble as you go across the bit into the hard shoulder. And then the car swerves one way and the other. I was like, no, do you know what? Headphones off. Let's just have a chat with the driver. Keep him awake.
Talk to Vera for a while.
Yeah, so kept him awake. And but it was a good weekend and four competitive games. I mean, there's a couple that didn't end up being, you know, really only the one that wasn't a one-score game was the Falcons and the Rams. But even that was a competitive game. That was a fun weekend of football.
It was a great weekend of football. And you had every kind of football that you could possibly want. Yeah. We went throwback in the Bills-Jags game to 1964.
We went throwback because they couldn't throw forward. That's why.
But, you know, you saw, I really thought, a great effort by the Saints.
Game. Best till last.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, you think about a team that has – that's why when we had to pick our outstanding team of the week after the broadcast – I just really felt like the Saints because Carolina did a great job of taking away the run.
Yep.
Taking away Ingram, taking away Kamara. But yet Breeze was still able to make plays. And you know what? You really see the difference between elite-level quarterback play and just quarterback play.
Some can make it
over the course of that weekend.
Some can make it look easy. Let's go through these games chronologically, and then we'll touch on a few big stories from around the NFL as well. And we'll take your questions in the mailbag. So Saturday night we started with the Kansas City Chiefs against the Tennessee Titans. Jeff, at halftime, you know, as we come into the studio and I do like the little link to take us to break, and I was like, if anyone calls to trade for Alex Smith, hang up the phone because this guy's been red hot. I mean, he had four incompletions in the first half. Two of those were drops.
Yeah.
And so they were leading 21-3. And our chat coming out of the break is about, is this the last half of football for Mike Mularkey in Tennessee? And, you know, we kind of had to talk about how Tennessee got back into it, but I don't think any of us really felt they would.
No.
And they totally dominated the second half. They had some luck along the way, of course. You have to have a bit of that. But just look at the second half. So Tennessee had 16 first downs. Kansas City had just three. And Tennessee scored the last 19 points. That 18-point comeback on the road was the largest in the Super Bowl era.
And done by a team that's not known for big play ability.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like, you know, you're going to face the Patriots or you're going to face Breeze or you're going to face, you know, any of the elite level quarterbacks in the game right now. And you know, Marcus had been struggling so much over the back half of the season.
Absolutely, he's, yeah.
You know,
27th rated quarterback in the NFL he was this season.
Way more interceptions than touchdowns, which is not characteristic of him. But, you know, I think there were a couple factors that played into it. He just basically took the game over. Mm. And then Kansas City just, it's like they forgot that they had the league's leading rusher. I mean, when Kareem Hunt gets eight touches in a half of football,
Yeah, he ended
when it's 21-3.
Yeah, he ended the game with 11 for 42 rushing, but I think he had 5 carries, wasn't it, in the second half?
Yeah, and that's
you're up by 18.
That was what was so baffling. And then Peter
especially with Kelce out, Jeff, you think, well, actually, we're going to make it about Kareem Hunt. We're going to bleed the clock. We're going to make this difficult.
Yeah, because
Tennessee aren't going to score quick if they score quick.
You know, and Tyreek Hill had been inconsistent catching the football. And you look at that football team, and like you say, when Kelce went out with the concussion, then you would have thought, now we're going to lean on the run game and we're going to pound away at it. And, you know, Alex didn't play bad in the second half. You know, that fourth down throw at the end of the game when they're driving, trying to score, that's a ball that's got to get caught. Now, it's in the middle of defenders, and I know the safety was bearing down.
Yeah, Albert Wilson gets his hands
on
that.
You get your hands
Jeff,
on that ball, you got to
make
that play.
And you make the catch, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, just 5 completions as well in the second half for Alex Smith. Tennessee, where they did come alive, Jeff. And I mean, obviously, the fun play was the Marcus Mariota
touchdown to Mariota.
only the second time in NFL history. Brad Johnson did it in 97 for the Vikings, but really, the basis for their comeback was the ground attack. 202 rushing yards on the day for a team that over the last month of the season had actually struggled to run the football.
Yeah, what Henry have, 140?
Yeah.
And you know, when you look at it, I didn't feel like during the game, even as we were broadcasting the game, you know, I didn't feel like, you know, like they were just pounding away at them. But, you know, what I think they really did was they got after where Kansas City has been most susceptible all year long, and that's in their ability to stop people with the
run. We could see Kansas City tiring, couldn't we, as that game went on.
You could see it. And you would get tired, too, if you had to play as many snaps as that defense did in the second
Tackling
half.
Tackling a 6'3", 240-pound running back.
And, you know, and then you got and Marcus is not a little guy either at quarterback, and you're chasing him all over the yard. And, you know, and it's just amazing. You know, when I thought about the weekend is in every single case – throughout the weekend, the losing team, you could see the warts that are on them, that have been on them all year.
Yep.
And that's what playoff football tends to do, expose wherever you're weakest.
It's funny when you look at some of the playoffs, and we'll go through the others in a second, but with the Rams, it feels like it's just the beginning of something. Same with Buffalo, because they cleaned a lot of their house. They lost, but it's the beginning of their journey. With the Chiefs, It's probably the end of Alex Smith. It's not the end of Andy Reid, but where the Rams and Buffalo can look to the future, I think the Chiefs will be nestled in the past on this one and say, well, we blew this. So now they've lost 6 straight at home in the playoffs.
6 straight home playoff games all the way back. And I think Joe Montana in
94, 93 season. That's ridiculous.
You think about that 2003 Chiefs team that was so good. Mm. I mean, they were a really good football team.
Yeah.
Priest Holmes, Dante Hall, you know, I mean,
it
Tony
defies
Gonzalez.
Logic, Jeff. You've coached in that stadium. It defies logic.
That's where I gave them the edge was because I didn't see any way that Tennessee could come into Arrowhead in January and win. And, you know, I want to talk about that whole deal with Alex Smith, Neil, because I just really feel like how in the world can you pin this on him? Which, in essence, if you move on from him, that's what you're doing.
Right, yeah.
And so
I agree.
When you pin it on him, he wasn't out there and couldn't stop the run.
No.
He wasn't making decisions about play calling. But, you know, he did, in my opinion, he did about as much as you could ask a guy to do
to win
a game.
Because if you stick him in the right situation, and the right situation for any quarterback is to have weapons around them. That's the whole point. You try and build weapons around your quarterback. Look at what Alex did in the first half.
Yeah.
Almost unstoppable. Yeah. Almost unstoppable. And then, I mean, maybe there was, you know, should there been of such a drop-off, Jeff, with no Travis Kelce?
Well, there's going to be a drop-off,
but
it shouldn't have been that drastic a drop-off.
No.
Because, you know, there have been games that they've won where Travis Kelce had 4 or 5 catches and you know, they found other guys to make plays. But at critical moments when guys had to make plays, and we talked about that fourth quarter pass.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's also on the coaches because when you have that situation, it's 21-3, Neil. At home, you just do a probability of that, and it's about 90% in the NFL you're going to win the football game.
Yeah, well, just the fact that was the largest comeback on the road in
the
playoffs, tells you it right there. It should have been over.
To me, it's as big a, you know, implosion, if you will, as the Falcons in the Super Bowl.
Well, let's come back. I want to come back to Alex Smith in a couple of minutes when we wrap up that game. But part of the news of this This loss for the Kansas City Chiefs relates to their coaching staff because yesterday Matt Nagy, who didn't call the plays for Kareem Hunt, was named as the head coach of the Chicago Bears.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I saw that one coming.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, it's amazing because to me, if there's a guy who's as connected as anybody and knows what's going on in the world of the NFL, it's Peter King. And he just basically came out after, you know, when we had him on the show afterwards and said, this will be the end of Matt Nagy as a head coach. And doggone if the Bears don't on Monday announce that they are.
What are they looking for? Sean McVay? They're looking for the new McVay?
Well, I'm sure what they're doing is they're looking for an offensive guy. Isn't it interesting how it just goes in cycles? Because, you know, Trestman gets the job after Lovie Smith, a defensive guy.
Yep.
Trestman gets the job because he's going to unlock Cutler and they're going to start to score points. He gets fired, so they bring in John Fox, a defensive guy. He gets fired, and now they go to Matt Nagy in offense.
You know, I told you this in the studio on Sunday when Bears were doing their interviews. So the Bears were involving Mitchell Trubisky in the head coach search.
Well, go there with me now. You know,
I'm just telling you. Reading the news, Jeff. I'm just reading the news.
You know, I get it, man.
So that is,
to a certain degree, I get it. But, I mean, hey, with these young quarterbacks, I think there's it really concerns me that there's that much I mean, what happens if Mitch Trubisky gets hurt?
Yeah.
Then what?
Well,
you brought this guy in because he, you know.
Yeah, but it's just an example. Whether we agree with it or not,
you're exactly
it's
right.
The way the league's going, isn't it?
It's what's happening. And, you know, is Matt Nagy ready to be a head coach? I can't tell you that.
Not sure we heard his name being mentioned too much.
His was not one of those prominent names out there.
No.
But this is a little bit, I think, of a Bear deal. You know, if you talk to guys that have played there, been there, one of the things they're going to say is that they're not you're not going to see the Bears making a 10-year, $100 million deal for somebody to coach their football team.
A couple of other things to wrap up this game between the Titans and the Chiefs. Second half play calling. So take us through this from a coach's point of view, because Peter raised it straight away. Peter King was like, Matt Nagy didn't call Kareem Hunt's number. Okay, is this not on Andy Reid as well? Because even if Andy doesn't use the detail of it, if he doesn't use the detail of what the play is being called, at least say, let's dial up Kareem Hunt's number here. Give me a run. Let's run the ball.
I don't think Andy took his headset off in the second half. You know, I mean, he had his headset on. And he had communication
with. So it's on him as well. Yeah, right?
Absolutely, because you are responsible as the head coach for the flow of the game, for, you know, the timeouts, when you're going to challenge a call.
Yep.
But also on defense and on offense and on special teams, you have the final say on all things. And whether it's, hey, Matt, give me a run here. Or we need to run the ball, or let's get Kareem involved, or whatever. However, if he doesn't want to make the exact play call, just the philosophy,
the flow
of the game.
Yeah.
Same thing on defense. Bobby, I need pressure here. Or Bobby, let's play coverage here.
Right.
Or
you pick which one, but we need this.
Dave, let's go after the block here. Or you know, let's play safe here. And that's your job as the head coach. So ultimately, that's why it always goes back to, you know, Harry S. Truman, the buck stops here. Yeah. That's just the way it is.
Just wrapping up with Alex Smith, whether it's right or wrong and whether they put the blame on him or not, I feel like they're going to move on. Is he done there, do you think? I personally think, again, you'd be careful what you wish for behind door number two, but I think they feel like as a franchise they must have felt that in the first place to draft, move up and grab Mahomes like they did. They had to feel like they were going to make that move soon. So I think he's done.
Well,
I don't think it's right, but I think he's done.
I think there's a possibility he's done. But, you know, when they drafted Mahomes, I thought, okay, you've got a guy who's going into his 13th year, and you're being smart about it, and you're going to like Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre.
Yep.
You're going to draft a guy.
And let him sit for a few
years. And
then
let him learn and sit and get comfortable with what you want and how to be a pro and all of that.
I still think they should do that.
I do too.
Still think
that's the
Alex.
Right move
I just
for them.
Don't know if they will.
Now, the question's going to be, when you look at them, where are they deficient? We talked about the warts on every team. Well, Kansas City, you look at Kansas City right now, and, you know, you got one real pass rusher in Justin Houston, and he's kind of on the way down himself.
Yep.
Tom Bahali is not the Tom Bahali that used to
not
be.
Not anymore. They missed D Ford this year. He had a back injury.
Yeah, and you know, you got guys like the critical play at the end of the game where Mariota.
Frank Zombo being blocked out, but you don't allow yourself to do that.
And it sounds like I'm anti-Frank Zombo, but Frank Zombo's a good football player. Mm. He's not a guy that you want in that scenario.
Well, Jeff, you've coached defense. No matter how good Marcus Mariota is on that block, you want your linebacker to shed the block of the quarterback and make a play. That's the bottom line.
That should never happen. Never happen. And, you know, I give Marcus a lot of credit for, you know, being competitive enough and, you know, putting the team ahead of his potentially get hurt to go do that. Most quarterbacks wouldn't in that situation, but he's that kind of guy. Mm. But you know, just you look at that defense and you say, you know, inside at linebacker, you know, you're getting old. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you got guys that, you know, have been in the league 12, 14 years, that's now.
Well, we got DeMarcus sitting next to us in the studio.
Was drafted in the same class.
Same as Derek Johnson.
Yeah,
right?
And that's what
same
I'm saying.
Class, yeah.
When Derek Johnson is there and you got Zombo and you see a guy like Sorensen who's a good football player and can do a lot of things, but when those are your frontline guys, that's when that tells me that your defense isn't good enough. They lost on Terry Poe. They never replaced him with a comparable player. You know, again, Tom Bahali doesn't give you anything on the edge anymore. If Justin Houston, I mean, when you only have one, it's easy to turn protection and do the things that you need to do to take care of chip that guy. So, I mean, if you're looking at Kansas City, you got to say, gosh, man, we got to get better on defense. Somehow we got to get better on defense.
Tennessee's defense was very good, though.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, and see, that's what's interesting is when Kelce went out, I really thought that LeBeau did a great job of now saying, okay, one of the things that I have to take away is gone. I can now put more emphasis on Tyreek Hill on playing coverage, you know, again. And then he didn't get challenged by the play calling from Kansas City,
right.
You know, where they just line up and say, okay, let's see if you can stop us. Even if, Neil, if you think about it, like when that Tennessee drive was like unbelievable. There was one drive was like, I don't know how many plays they were out there. The offense has got to go out and say, hey, we got to help our defense now. Even if we run it three times.
Right.
And you think you're going to use all of the play clock.
It's
at least a minute and a half your defense can rest.
Right.
And when you go out there and go three and out and throw it two of the three
one,
times.
There was one drive, I think, where I said to you, like, that was literally a 29-second drive.
Yeah.
And then they were punting.
So
it's
now
like they've been off the field for
not
29
only are
seconds.
You exhausted on defense, now you don't give the defensive coaches a chance to make adjustments on the sideline.
Yeah,
so it's a double-headed monster.
Literally, you only have a finite amount of time, don't you? Let's move on to the second game on Saturday then. The Atlanta Falcons, they won 26-13 at the Los Angeles Rams. Jeff, a couple of numbers jump out to me, or things that jump out to me here as a sort of starting point was how sloppy the Rams were. Now, they were very good on defense, but there was some sloppiness early in this game. They couldn't get their offense going. Special teams was a real issue for the Rams. And also, over the course of this game, and especially in the second half, the Falcons kind of made a commitment to like controlling the clock. Atlanta had the ball for 37 minutes and 35 seconds in this game, which, as you made this point in the studio on Saturday night, you just can't get into a rhythm if you're Jared Goff and the offense.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you something. What happens to offensive guys, and you know, I've worked for a couple of really, really good ones. When they're on, and I'm talking about play callers, and looking at, you know, McVay right now, when you're on the sideline and the game is being held up, basically, by the fact that, you know, your defense can't get off the field, and now it's you're 8 minutes on the sideline, which ends up being in real time probably around 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah.
You get out of sync. And then what the natural thing is that when you get the ball back, you feel like, oh, my God, we got to score right now because we went off the, you know, off the field.
And somewhere. That's a historic thing throughout the years of the NFL, because one of the most potent offenses in NFL history was the Buffalo Bills in the 1990 season. They come up against the New York Giants, coached on defense by Bill Belichick. Mm-hmm. They had a backup quarterback in Jeff Hostetler.
Yep.
And that game, Super Bowl 25, New York had the ball for 40 minutes. They ran O.J. Anderson into the ground. And the best offense, and so it's a tried and tested formula
to beat,
and it stresses offenses.
Yeah, I mean, we said that during the course of the game is how do you beat the number one rated offense in the National Football League? Make them stand on the sideline.
Yeah,
you know, because they can't move the ball, they can't score, they can't do anything other than get antsy and get, you know, it's a psychology that comes over them. And I have actually heard. I'm talking about guys that are NFL guys. Say this: let them score. We just want to give me the ball back. Got to get the ball back. Let them score. If you're going to let them score, let them score fast so we can get the ball back. The mentality that they
don't let them go 8.5 minutes.
Yeah, that's what they get into because they know. Then the pressure comes. Every throw gets to be more important. Every possession becomes more important because you know you're not going to get them. If you look at a game, Neil. You count on 12 possessions a game, 6.5.
Yep.
That's what you should get. But when the other team now takes it like happened the other night, 8.5 minutes, well, now you're not going to get your three possessions that quarter.
Yeah,
you might get one.
One, if two if you're lucky. Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman worked together on the running game. Freeman had 18 carries, 66 yards and a touchdown. Coleman, 14 carries, 40 yards. Freeman kind of took over in the second half. Was really trying to finish his runs. You could see he was trying to make a statement. I'd like to talk about those guys and also Matt Ryan, Jeff, who in the face of some fierce pass rush from Donald. Aaron Donald is a ridiculous beast. Didn't he have 10 pressures in the first half, 10 quarterback pressures in the first half? And Matt Ryan completes 70% of his passes on the day. So let's talk a bit about the Falcons' offense against what is clearly a very, very good Rams defense.
Well, I think the Rams defense is what we expected it would be with Wade.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that – and this is a historical thing, I think, if you check it with Wade's defenses. They tend – if they're going to have a hole, it's going to be in stopping the run.
Right.
And, you know, when you do to them – I'm the defensive players with the Rams got to be just sick this week because when you go out and turn it over, have penalties in the kicking game, all the stuff that the special teams did. I mean, they had the ball. Atlanta had the ball, I think, three times in the first quarter in the red zone and got 6 points. And you can't ask your defense to
do
better
anymore.
Than that.
Yeah,
but eventually, if you keep putting them out there in those kind of in that kind of field position, eventually it's gonna cost you against a good football team. And you know, Matt Ryan, if you didn't think Matt Ryan was tough before that game, you know he's a tough dude because he was getting just pounded early in the game.
One of the things we talked about in the studio as we were watching it unfold, Jeff, was that we were watching two good defenses. Two really well-coached defenses. Fundamentals.
Great
you talked about, fundamentals.
Yeah.
Brian Poole making tackles in open field. Desmond Trufant and Robert Alford reaching over at just the right time to knock down passes. This is a Falcons defense. And if you look at the Falcons defense this year against top 10 scoring offenses, they played the Lions. They allowed 26. The Patriots, they allowed 23. Vikings, they allowed 14. The Saints twice, they allowed 17 and 23. And they hold the Rams to 13 points. This is a growing defense. This is a fast defense. Mm-hmm. This is a defense that should be talked about maybe in the same sentence as the Rams at the moment.
Well, I think certainly it's a rising defense. Because if you look at what they've done since Dan Quinn has come in there, they've gotten better each year. They've drafted better each year. They're now starting to fill out the profile that he had for them.
Deion Jones is his Bobby Wagner.
Exactly.
Keanu Neal is his Cam Chancellor.
And everywhere you go, with the exception of they don't have the long corners that they had in Seattle, but they've got guys that can cover. Trufant is fearless out there. I mean, he is – and he's going to make some mistakes. He's going to grab and hold a little bit and some of that. But I'm going to tell you something. Those guys don't back off. They want to play press. They want to challenge. They've got that kind of that attitude. And that's, I think, what Dan Quinn has wanted since he came to Atlanta. Now, you look at those numbers, Neil, and in every case, those are numbers where you say if you don't win the game, you should have a chance to win the game if you're only giving up 20 points a game.
It's funny. The Jags set about building a Seattle-type defense, and they did it. Atlanta under Dan Quinn have tried to build a Seattle-type defense, and they've done it. Both those defenses are better than what actually Seattle have been left with.
Yeah, they are. And, and you know, you look at it, and there's a – you know, it's like Sean says when we're sitting in the studio. You know, he's a proponent of defense wins championships. And here's case in point. Is there a team still in the finals that doesn't have a good defense? Well, we got? I mean, Minnesota plays great defense.
Yeah.
You know, we've already said
Saints are improved on defense.
Much better. Much better.
Philadelphia's defense was very good.
Yeah.
Atlanta's.
So Tennessee. Yeah. Tennessee scoring defense is good. They
New
give
England's
up some yards. They don't give up
good.
Big touchdowns. New England, who was not very good at the start of the year, has really played better down the stretch. So
I
think there's a lot of truth to that.
Well, certainly some good defense on show on Sunday. I think it was good defense.
Wait a second.
Some bad offense. There was some bad offense.
You know what was shocking to
Jacksonville and Buffalo. Jacksonville win 10-3. Let's talk about that one.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. If you think about it, you know, and I know it wasn't pretty to watch at all, but I got to think that, if you'd have said to Sean McDermott, here's the deal, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Your plan will get you to the last 2 minutes of the game with the ball and a chance to win the football game on the road against the number one or two ranked defense in the National Football
League. I'll take it.
He'd take it in a heartbeat. Yeah. Now, what he wouldn't have taken, I'm sure, is the fact that his quarterback would
had
get
to be
hurt.
Nathan Peterman,
and in the last 40 seconds, you know, with the ball on their side of the field, you got Nathan Peterman out there.
Blake Bortles is much talked about, always. Mm-hmm. Red hot at the start of December, then he throws 5 interceptions the final 2 weeks of the regular season. So all the questions come flooding back. And then, Jeff, on Sunday, Tony Romo tried to help him out a lot. Tony Romo was talking about the windy conditions. There was one field goal that they kicked where the wind chart said 3 miles an hour. That's not going to even blow a feather over, Jeff. 87 passing yards, 88 rushing.
He missed on some throws that are no farther than where Nick Pike is sitting.
Our
right
producer
across,
sitting behind
right
the camera. Yeah, exactly.
And Tony's going, well, you know, the wind kind of got. I'm like, Tony,
come on,
man. What are you throwing?
So the rushing yards are just about what redeemed Blake Bortles because it did help his team win. But, Jeff, it's not a sustainable model.
No.
We've seen it. That was Tim Tebow-esque. That performance at quarterback, and I'm not saying that in a good way.
No, it was Tebow-esque, with the exception that Tebow would at least hit a couple of throws.
Right.
And the only throw that I can remember him really hitting was the play-action dig to start the second half of the game. Because, you know, there's checkdowns, there's screens, there's, you know.
If you're missing checkdowns, Jeff, does that to you as a coach, does that scream confidence? Because he's almost like, looks like now he's trying to place the ball out.
I agree with you on that one 100%. You know, we watch him throw, and he just doesn't cut it loose anymore. It's like he overthinks, or, you know, what I've heard quarterback coaches say, he's steering the ball rather than throwing the ball. And when we say you're steering the ball, you're kind of babying the ball there because you're worried about not being accurate. And you can't play the game that way at that position.
No, it's affecting Leonard Fournette as well, Jeff. You look at his numbers, 21 carries, 57 yards.
Yeah, and you know what? The thing that was a little bit surprising on both cases, you know, and again, you can't argue with the fact that obviously it was what McDermott wanted to do was have a chance to win the game in the fourth quarter. Mm. But they were given Jacksonville's defense such an advantage because of what they were playing offensively with two tight ends and fullbacks and all that stuff. So the numbers in the box, the sheer numbers in the box, just made – I thought Shady McCoy played a great football game and a courageous football game after being hurt the week before. But they didn't do anything to help him or Tyrod by spreading the defense out and at least forcing them to cover down. Jacksonville, same thing. Jacksonville wanted to be in two tight ends. They wanted a fullback in the game. They wanted to play power football. I get it, but I also understand that defenses are just – the more you pack in there, the more they're going to drop one more in, and eventually you don't have enough guys.
Jalen Ramsey had the game-winning, game-sealing interception. He's for real as one of the best in the NFL, isn't he? But, I mean, like you said, he wasn't really tested from those Buffalo wide receivers, but you can see that he's got a swagger and he backs it up.
Yeah, and Bouye on the other side. And, you know,
Calais Campbell up front. Oh, my goodness.
I mean, Church is going to be in the box and knocking you out. And, you know, they got linebackers who can run. I mean, interestingly enough, Posluszny goes out of the game. And with the one exception, Tevin doesn't Tevin doesn't make one play on a run play. The one play got out a little bit on him. But, you know, here's a backup guy playing at a not his natural position, and they hardly missed a beat. So they've got depth, too. You know, Marcell Dareus has been a two-time Pro Bowler, and he probably played, I would guess, in that game maybe 12 or 14
snaps.
Part
of the rotation, yeah.
But when he's in there, you can feel him in there.
Yeah, Jacksonville are going to advance to play Pittsburgh. We'll break that down later in the week on Inside the Huddle. But last time they met, week five, Jacksonville won that game 30-9 in Pittsburgh, and they picked off Big Ben five times. Let's wrap up Wild Card Weekend looking at the New Orleans Saints 31-26 win over the Carolina Panthers. I think we did save the best till last. It was a fantastic game. And let's start with Drew Brees, because it was interesting. Clearly, Jeff, the Panthers came in and said, you two 1,500-yard rushers or running backs, Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram, you are not going to beat us today. Which is really, when you think about it, that's a credit to them too, because not many teams come in and say, let's make Drew Brees beat us. Yeah. Right? Well, careful exactly. What you wish for.
and it just comes down to how you want to die. You want to die right. Slow or you want to die fast. I mean,
either way, you're going to die.
But that's true. And I mean, you think about it, and they did a great job. I mean, I thought Carolina's defense played an outstanding game.
Yeah.
Again, when we talk about warts on a football team, let's talk about the warts that are on Carolina, why they're home this week. They don't have, you know, they don't have enough weapons on offense. Yep. They're so reliant, I think, on Greg Olsen and so reliant on Cam Newton. And McCaffrey was the only one that made a big play in the game, the catch and run touchdown he had. you know, Cam's mechanics were better. I thought he threw the ball better. But yet, in the game, when you have to make critical plays, Clay has a chance to make a catch in the end zone, uses bad hand selection, makes a rookie mistake, and drops a ball that, you know, you think about, that's probably the difference in the
makes
game
a difference,
right there.
Especially there, because they missed the field goal. So, first of all, they're going to get seven. Then they're going to get three.
Then they're going to get none.
And
then you give
Brees
up a huge
the other
play,
way, right.
And it's a minimum 10-point swing.
Yeah, and that was a long drive to start the game to lead to what should have been a score for Carolina, and it didn't happen. Then Brees goes the other way in one play, and that's it. It's done.
Yeah, and I think the thing, too, that you got to remember, when things like that happen, at home particularly, now all of a sudden the confidence of the Saints in that case is, you know, through the roof, and Carolina's going, we got to make those plays.
Drew Brees was outstanding, but I want to talk one big issue from this game, which is going to make news for a few days, and I don't think we've heard the last of it yet. Cam Newton and a potential concussion. We don't know all of the kind of ins and outs. He afterwards claimed he was poked in the eye, and Ron Rivera said he was poked in the eye. And if you watch when he sat on the field, he closes one eye, then he closes the other, Jeff. And I'm not sure I buy the poked in the eye argument. If I poke you in the eye now, the first thing you're going to do is put your hand up and rub it, probably. And he didn't do that. I think Cam had a concussion, or Cam was taking a knee to buy time for Derek Anderson to warm up. But once he took that knee on the field and couldn't get off the sideline, he has to go to the locker room for a concussion evaluation. Now, he went into the blue tent very briefly, but it was so brief we didn't actually see it on the TV pictures. But Cam was out there leading a valiant comeback attempt, and he looked fine. I'll give him that. He looked okay. He was making the throws where they needed to be made. But under the concussion policy, he shouldn't have even been out there. What's your thoughts?
Well, I think that you got to go back to the protocols. Mm. What are the protocols? If a player takes a knee, right, or is having trouble standing or walking, regardless of what the injury is, he's got to go where? To the locker room. Mm. Not to the blue tent, to the locker room. And you could see in the broadcast that he didn't want to go off the field. He was adamant about he wanted to go back out there and play. But the bottom line is, it's come down from the league. It's not the player's decision. No. It's not the coach's decision. It's not even the trainer's decision. It's the independent evaluator's
and
decision.
And it can't be a rule that applies to everyone but the star players, because we've already seen Seattle slapped with a $100,000 fine this year for not taking care of Russell Wilson properly. So the NFL does still hold the team accountable in a way, even though there's independent assessors there. The Seahawks got fined $100,000. Houston put Tom Savage back in a quarterback when they needed a quarterback. It can't just be that we apply this rule, but it doesn't apply to quarterbacks because we need the quarterback out there. You know, because this is too serious to worry about. Now,
safety.
I know, you know, the flip side of that is you could argue that the players sign up for this game. They know what they're signing up for. It's the same if I went into a boxing ring or I went into a UFC fight. I would know what I'm signing up for. I'm an NFL player. I know what I'm signing up for. If that's the case, then do away with the protocols altogether. Well, but if you're going to have them, they have to be administered 100% correctly. And I don't know if this one was.
Well, I think you got to remember, even in boxing, right, even in UFC fights, if a player or if a participant appears in boxing the way they describe
stop the fight.
If you are defenseless, the fight stopped.
Mm.
Or the referee will send you to the ring doctor, right? I mean, so there is protocols and everything.
Right.
It's not just, you know, bare-knuckle fighting in 1897. If we have a protocol, then we all have to adhere to the protocol. Mm. Now, can you imagine how the Saints would have felt if he did lead them on that drive at the end? And let's be clear about concussions. There is so much that we don't know about the brain and how it functions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the reason for all this is to keep the players safe. And, yeah, you can say they sign up for it. Yes, they do. But but you have a moral responsibility to the athlete,
right,
as a league. And I think the league has taken that very seriously, and the doctors and – and so it's not in the players' hands. It's not in the coaches' hands. And a matter of fact, it shouldn't be in their hands. So I think – I agree with you, Neil. I think we're going to hear a lot about this as we go forward, and I think the league's going to get even more tough about it, because when it happens on the national stage
– right, this is the thing. It's the playoffs now.
Yeah.
There's no hiding any of this. There's not seven other games going on in the same time slot. That's the only game being played.
And that poked-in-the-eye thing, I mean – Cam Newton wears an eye shield. So if he got poked in the eye,
good point.
You know, if he got poked in the eye, it had to have come up through his shield.
Which, yeah, still
like,
could
what
happen,
are the chances
but unlikely.
Of that one?
Unlikely.
I mean,
come on, Ron.
I mean, look at the film and tell me he got poked in the eye.
My goodness. I hadn't even thought about that.
So, I mean, don't.
Completely
you know,
forgot
come
about
on.
That. what about, obviously, if Cam throws the touchdown pass to win, and he had a shot. Funchess, you said you were surprised.
That ball should have got caught.
Yeah.
That ball should have got caught, because I tell you what, Lattimore made a critical mistake because there's no flat threat. They're playing a 2-deep coverage.
He didn't sink back
enough. He's got to sink and help on Funchess so that the safety was where he needed to be. Cam put the ball right where Funchess had a chance to go get it, and Funchess didn't go compete for the ball like he should have.
Had Funchess caught that pass, we would be talking about whether Cam should have been in the game. And Sean Payton on his own 48-yard line going for it on 4th-and-2.
See, I think that you are exactly right. There are two storylines that right now today would be dominating New Orleans
talk radio.
Sean Payton's
dodged a little bullet there.
And, unbelievable. And we're in the studio and we're watching this thing go unfold, right? And
you could see him ask Breeze, do you want to go for it?
He comes over. Go for it or punt. What's Breeze going to say?
That's what we said. I said to you. He's not going to say
it. You're asking Drew Breeze whether he wants to go for it.
Yeah, coach, punt.
It's 4th-and-2.
Yeah.
You have a Pro Bowl punter.
Yeah. And an offense in Carolina McCaffrey did score the one long run, but they're not necessarily going to have somebody
score. They're not built for that.
They're not going to score that quickly. Yeah,
no.
Make him go the distance.
And so you got to play, in my opinion – you got to play the percentages in that case. Let Tommy go out there and punt him down inside the 20. Mm. There's a minute 40, I think, was on the clock at that time.
They didn't have any timeouts left,
they have
Carolina.
No timeouts. Yep. Now you've got to go 80 as opposed to going 50. Mm. And, I mean, it's just not a smart football play.
No.
Now, they got away with it, so nobody's talking about
it. They got away with
it,
Jeff, because Mike Adams makes an interception, which –
dumb.
First of all, he's got to knock it down, right? So then
dumb.
He gets the ball at the 48. But also, this kind of got lost in the everything that was going on Sunday night. I don't think it was a catch.
No.
I don't think he controls that all the way to the ground. And we thought it was going to be looked at for a long time. And all of a sudden, they're going to rule that an interception.
Here's the other thing that was so unbelievably smart about it. Breeze is running around. They can't protect him. He's out of the pocket. Every other time, what's Drew Brees going to do? He's going to throw the ball out of bounds.
Yeah.
But he was situationally aware and threw a duck up there.
Yeah.
To Adams.
Tempted him almost.
Yeah. And Adams, like Pavlov's dog, started salivating when the ball was in the air.
He must have an interception bonus. Although you might argue that trying to bat it down, that's what Darrell Revis did, and he batted it straight to Marcus Mariota. So maybe Adams was thinking, I'll secure it.
I don't know, man. I catch it and throw it down
if
you have to.
Yeah,
but.
Exactly. Let's take a few questions in the mailbag as we finish up this first of two editions of Inside the Huddle. This week. So let's have this question from Phil Williams. Can the Jags, we are going to tip our hand to our preview show later in the week, but can the Jags win in Pittsburgh, or was the first meeting this season a one-off? We'll break this down properly later in the week, but Jeff, can they go in and win in Pittsburgh again?
They've done it.
Yeah, so that's what you'd say, right?
That's what I'm selling right now. Yeah. It was interesting, Doug's comment. He goes, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. Yeah. I'm not stupid.
Not yeah, right. Yeah, we got to play better. This one relates to the Jags as well. Brian Friel asks, despite being still in the playoffs, is Blake Bortles' time at Jacksonville coming to an end, and is Eli on the horizon? Now, we don't know how that's going to play out, whether it's Eli Manning would even get out of New York, but maybe a Tom Coughlin reunion, or Kirk Cousins, does he become available? Alex Smith. I feel like Jacksonville have had a good long look at Blake Bortles, and I don't know if they're completely happy where they are. I think they would move on. What do you think?
Well, right now it's what, Chad Henne? I mean,
yeah, not no, move on.
That's what I'm saying.
Right,
until,
yeah, exactly.
You can't move on until you got someplace to move.
Yeah.
And so if you're Dave Gettleman right now, you're sitting there in the catbird seat because you're an Eli guy.
Yeah.
Right. They drafted him while he was there. You know, and so if that's truly the case, then you know you're holding on to a – this is why all this talk about Alex Smith confuses me. Mm. Because those are huge assets in the world of the NFL.
Yeah.
Now, if you feel like Mahomes is ready to go, now you can move your asset.
Yeah.
But who are you going to move to? What are you going to do in New York?
Yeah.
I mean, you got a Super Bowl-level football team when they're healthy and playing well. So you're going to give up a quarterback to – now, who's your guy?
Yeah. Have you seen nothing, Blake, though? I think they have.
I think they've got to try and move on. Right. I just don't know. Until they get better, they can't.
All right. One last one really, really quickly because we're running out of time for this week. Matty Evans. He says, how much work has Pete Carroll had done to be 66 and the oldest coach in the NFL? He still looks 20 years younger than Bill Belichick. That's happiness.
That's how you live your...
Bill Belichick's just permanently miserable.
And Pete's never had a bad day or
exactly.
bad
that's
sandwich
is,
in his
right?
life.
That's it. It's all about being happy. That's us done here on the first of two Inside the Huddles this week. We'll be back on Thursday to break down the divisional round of the playoffs. Until then, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.